KCMO Talk Radio, Wendy's Coffee House. Hello there, I'm Wendy. Thank you for listening. If you would like to find out more about this show, you can check out my blogs, wendyscoffeehouse.com or talkingtonightlights.com. A lot of stuff on there, metaphysically oriented, okay? So paranormal, ghosts, UFOs, Bigfoot, all of that on the blogs. And some sci-fi, because that's where the new ideas come from. Reincarnation is the topic, and past lives. There's so much more information now about past lives in terms of people having experiences and sharing them instead of saying, well, it must be my imagination. And there are some fantastic studies, some research going on at the University of Virginia, the Division of Perceptual Studies, with Ian Stevenson and currently Jim Tucker, MD. So all of this about reincarnation is finally coming to the fore. We're getting a chance to talk about it as people are becoming more comfortable sharing their experiences and being validated by science. So this is another exploration of reincarnation, past lives, and I want to get into more of the metaphysical aspect as well as what she remembers of the lives between lives. Dina Merriam has written several books covering past lives. The recent one, this is number 3, When the Bright Moon Rises, The Awakening of Ancient Memories, covers 10,000 years. Dina Merriam is an author, storyteller, and the founder and convener of the Global Peace Initiative of Women. Website, gpiw.org. In 2014, she received the Nuano Peace Prize for her interfaith peace efforts. Reincarnation, past lives. Sometimes those memories can help you clear problems in the present incarnation. We're getting into this with the past life information, but I wanted to go into more of the metaphysical, esoteric stuff in terms of, you know, remembering those past lives and what it's like and how that can be triggered. There's so many people right now who are coming to the same conclusion that they're having memories of past lives that are influencing some way, shape, or form the present life. And it's really powerful when you find out some of those blocks that you can clear and maybe even resolve some health issues or major trauma in your life as a result of a past life memory that all of a sudden it thinks, it's like, oh, wow, how could I not have known? So my guest, Dina Merriam, is going to go there. What triggered this and what is the story about?
I guess I should preface it by saying that my first book, My Journey Through Time, which I published a few years ago, recounts how my memories began to return to me about 20, 30 years ago, really. And at first it was somewhat disorienting because I would find myself, it wasn't just like, oh, I remember that I was that. I actually re-entered those lives. I re-entered those time periods and had to go through all of the, you know, struggles that we encounter in life. And so I was much younger. I was a longtime meditator even then. So I understood that this was a past life recall. But it was emotionally draining, I should say that. And I don't encourage people to go digging.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it was enlightening. I understood so much about my current life. I understood about my goals, what I wanted to do in this life. It's like seeing your history, right? And it transformed me, actually, because it changed my relationship with death. I began to identify as a soul that keeps coming back, taking different personalities, and not fully identifying with the personality that I have now. It's like an actor who goes, you know, and for maybe 6 months is a certain character in a movie or in a series. And then suddenly the series is over, yeah. And they have to adapt to a new character. And so, you know, it's a little bit disorienting, you know, because it's different times and all that. So I finished that book, and then I had written another book about India, remembering a past life. And I never know what comes next. I thought, well, that's it. And until I wrote this book, I really did not feel a connection with China. I work a lot with the Tibetan Buddhist community because I do interfaith work, and I just, China was a blank to me. But I was in India, and I had this experience of being back in the Vedic times, seeing the lifetime of this young girl, Sundari, who I've talked about in the book, who has coming out of the forest. It's a higher age. Things were much more harmonious at that time. But she falls in love with this man, and there can't be a completion to it. And she's actually sent away from the community. And then it stopped, and I didn't see any more. And I mean, when I don't see more, there's not much I can do. I just have to wait and say, well, maybe something more will come. Maybe it won't come. I'm in the middle of a story here.
I like it. In the book, you're going, hey, it stopped. I want to go back. Send me back. I want to go back now. It's like, no, there's more to the story between. And so, yeah, it was like having a little temper tantrum. No, I'm not done yet.
Yeah, and then I was in Bangkok at a gathering, and there were some Chinese young people that I know. It was an ecological meeting on climate change, and suddenly I find myself back in China, and I always check myself. It's like, really, Dina? I mean, is this real?
Yeah.
Are you really seeing this? And I found myself as this unknown poet, woman poet in China, and searching for her Taoist master and for an understanding of Taoist truth. And she finds a master, and she goes through a training. And during the training, she goes back in time and relives two of her past lives, the two lives just previous to that. So, you know, I kind of feel like I'm in the middle of a big jigsaw puzzle, and everything I see, I get another piece, and I put it in.
Yeah.
And it's like I'm looking, okay, the puzzle's being filled in. I'm seeing a pattern here. But there's still a few pieces that are not filled in.
When the Bright Moon Rises, The Awakening of Ancient Memories by Dina Merriam. You can check out Dina's Facebook page. That's where her book information is for the multiple books. In the book, you also refer to a guide in between who helps orient you and clarify things for you a little bit. Can you address what that's like?
Yes. In my first book, I do write about that state where we go when we leave our body. And one can look at it as in between lines, or one could look at our lives on Earth as the in-between lines, because we can stay in there, in that space, for a few hundred years. I mean, that in fact is more of our home than this world is. There is a being there, and I have another book coming out where I talk about my life on Earth with that being called Satya, who I have a very powerful relationship with, who helps me understand where the karmic pieces, all of my books are a study in the law of cause and effect. That's always been an interest of mine. How does this law work, cause and effect? How does something that we did thousands of years ago impact us today? How does that work? And the more you delve into this law of cause and effect, the more complex and magnificent it becomes. It's mind-boggling, actually. It's like this vast mandala where everything is connected to everything else. And it's true that, you know, people tend to think of looking at their life, oh, this is just my previous life that is impacting it. But there are things in your life that could have been related to what happened 10,000 years ago. It's like there are so many different lives, so many different experiences that you've had in the past that are impacting, that are shaping your life today. And the more we can connect to those experiences, even if we don't see the details, the more we can understand the universe and the loving way in which the universe gives us opportunities to fulfill things that have been left unfulfilled. And so the message that I'm always left with when I delve into this is the amount of love that's emitted from the universe to help each one of us and take the next step forward.
I want to go back to that, the time that you write about at the very beginning in this book. You talk about mantras and you talk about the communication that they had being basically telepathic. That's an interesting way of connecting, communicating, and from what we have read or what we've learned from other indigenous cultures, it isn't that uncommon. And, you know, the stuff that we do now, language is actually a little bit less honest, a lot more complex. And so I wanted you to address that initial beginning, because you pass a lot of wisdom on through the characters in this book. So we're going to take a quick break again. This is one of several books. Okay. When the Bright Moon Rises, The Awakening of Ancient Memories, my guest, Dina Merriam, books available on Amazon. Connect with her on Facebook or on her website, gpiw.org. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, my guest, Dina Merriam, and the book, When the Bright Moon Rises, The Awakening of Ancient Memories. But we're really going into more than that, into reincarnation, in the in-between realm of what you're doing between lives, and how, when this gets triggered, it might change your present-day relationship. The beginning of this book, that she deals with old school, basically telepathy, and can you explain how that came to you?
I've long had an interest in, according to the, you know, Eastern understanding of time, things move in cycles, and that what we call prehistory was actually in higher age. Writing wasn't needed because the mind, there was no need to write because people retained memory. I mean, for millennia, the Vedas were recited, passed down without anything being written, and yet they survived for centuries with no books. So it's because of people held it in their memory, even though there were thousands and thousands of hymns as part of this compilation. But people, so just as writing was a later coming in human history and showed a decline of our memory capability, so we had to start to write them down to remember them because the mind no longer could contain it all. In the same way, language was used, understood to be a powerful tool to activate vibrations. It could create, it could destroy. And the higher way of communicating was through the exchange of mental images. And even now, I mean, the great masters, you know, great yogis, can communicate mentally. And in the celestial worlds, whether we call them other dimensions or celestial worlds, a lot of communication is that way through the exchange of thought. Language is a less efficient way of communicating. We don't have the words. I mean, if we try to describe higher realities with our limited language, we can't. We get stumped. I mean, we do our best to work around it, but there really are no words to describe that experience. And yet we can experience it and we can know what it is and you can transfer that experience. And so in this time when human society was at a different stage, less on the external sense developed, but on the internal sense more developed. So we have outer development and we have inner development. And as the focus turns to the external world, the focus is taken away from the internal development, the spiritual development. So at this time when the book opens, it's in this higher stage about 8,000 years BCE, when there's much less development in the external world. There's still just small communities living by rivers, but their spiritual abilities are heightened. They can not only communicate. There were no wars. There were no weapons. There was no greed, not accumulation. People lived in harmony with whatever they had was enough. And there wasn't this sense of wanting more, of taking more from the earth. There was an understanding that the earth gives you what you need and provides for your needs, but there was no desire for more than what one's needs were. And that developed over time, you know, this sense of I want more and, you know, I need to conquer and I need to dominate and everything that came after that. So this gives a sense of what it was like in that higher time period, and that's where the story begins.
And that's in China?
Well, the story begins in India,
okay.
But in China at the same time, a similar civilization. You know, China and India are very ancient civilizations, and the interesting thing is we still have, in the collective memory, we have records of those times. So while the Vedas and the Rishis and the Saraswati civilization was taking place in India, you had a comparable thing in Japan, in China, around the Yellow River, the Yangtze and the Yellow River civilizations that were very similar. And so this book is an attempt to really harmonize the wisdom of the Rishis and the wisdom of the Taoist sages.
I heard another interview and you were saying that the Tao was very attractive and you felt drawn to that. The more you read about it, the more you connected to it. And I can understand that. I really value those teachings. Did it feel familiar or was it a brand new awareness?
It was a brand new awareness for me. Before I wrote this book, I had very little, I had really no study of Taoism. I didn't know much. I don't know any Taoists. But in the writing of this book, as I was reliving the life of this young woman poet called Xu, I was reliving her life. I became a Taoist. I began thinking in Taoist terms. I was getting up in the middle of the night writing poetry about Taoist themes. And I really became a Taoist. And it was only then that I deeply began to identify with ancient China. And I began to separate the current political system from this great culture that had so much wisdom. Just like, you know, I've always been very connected to India. And when I see India, I don't think of modern India. I think of the great rishis and sages that have for millennia have roamed those hills. It's the same thing in China. There are sacred mountains there. The Taoist masters, even now, I believe there are Taoist masters hidden away in China, waiting for the moment when this wisdom can come forth, when China can reconnect to its rich ancient spiritual history.
I agree, and I do think that some things have come forward. I have been reading recently. I'm thinking, why am I drawn to the interview with you? And then when the China information comes up, I think, aha, because I've been reading China's major mysteries. Something was mentioned by Ingo Swann about how they valued their abilities, the whether it's extrasensory or whether it's belief in other beings, such as, you know, UFOs and Bigfoot, Sasquatch, the unexplained. All those things go hand in hand with our higher abilities, which has to do with telepathy and also the ability to, some people use it for martial arts, but Qigong, which is a health practice to help you increase your energy and in many ways also improve your health on multiple levels, not just physical, but your spiritual abilities as well. And so when I read and then followed up with an interview about your discovery of that and being drawn to visit China, except for COVID-19.
Yes, I was about to go until COVID intervened.
So I, too, I believe there is so much more within the culture, the human, the being level, not the government level, but us as a people. They have a fascination with other interests that are metaphysical, that terminology, that takes us back to that higher level that she starts out with of being more connected to the land and to people.
There's a spiritual now, because of my interest in China, I've developed a network of people there, a small network, quiet network. Yeah. And there is definitely a spiritual awakening going on in China, akin to what was happening in our country a few decades ago. It's not reached the proportion that we have here in the U.S., but there's a lot of growing interest, especially among young people who've been into technology and are kind of fed up with the stress of modern life, and going to Buddhist monasteries, learning meditation. So there's definitely an interest in meditation, in yoga, in astrology, in connecting with other worlds. But it's kept rather quiet, and one has to kind of move surreptitiously through the network see it.
Now, that's a little similarity with this here as well. On some level, it's like, okay, we're open, and yet, no, we're not.
Exactly. And you know, we've opened up a lot in the last decade in this country. I mean, previously, you know, I mean, we had to sort of be in the closet, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and it's right now, all of a sudden, since the government is saying there are UFOs, well, then the mainstream public is saying, oh, yeah, there are UFOs. And there are people who have been having experience for 40 and 50 and 60 and 70 years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous to deny it, you know?
Yeah, it's like, okay, yeah, glad you guys are finally on board.
Yeah.
So that part of it, though, is what we're learning right now, is that we have a lot of things that connect us. And I want to go back into the past life experiences. Once you found these past life connections, did it make it, was it smoother sailing?
It was much smoother sailing, actually, because in a number of my lives, and I think this is probably not so uncommon, I struggled with finding my voice as a woman. And for many lives, that was an issue for me, feeling that I had a voice, and the having the self-confidence to come out. And in this life, at the beginning of my life, it was also a bit of a struggle, but eventually ended up founding the Global Peace Initiative. Women traveled around the world, you know, really one of the only women doing this kind of interfaith work, because there were no women doing it. And I thought, well, that's crazy, you know. We need to have a voice. And so I've been able to overcome in my current life. But, you know, until I saw it, it didn't make sense to me. I kept saying to myself, why am I doing this work? You know, I didn't really make sense to me until I saw the struggles that I had in finding my own voice over a number of lifetimes. I mean, even as I describe in this book, as this unknown poet married to quite a well-known and well-received poet, women did not have an easy time, you know, making a statement or assuming a leadership role. And even in the first part of the book, when I talk about the women sages and the women rishis, they're pretty much forgotten. Most of the teachers that have come down to us have been male. But the women were there, but they've just been erased.
Okay, hold on, hold on. We're going to take a quick break again. When the bright moon rises, the awakening of ancient memories. My guest is Dina Merriam. You can find her on Facebook. You can also go to the website, gpiw.org. Okay, this is gpiw.org, and this is the Global Peace Initiative of Women. Wendy's Coffee House, my guest, Dina Merriam, and the book is When the Bright Moon Rises. We're talking reincarnation, and this story also includes being aware of the in-between lives, the in-between awareness of knowing I'm going to go back into a lifetime. How many years can you go back? How many memories can you have of past lifetimes? There's no answer to that, but this one happened to be 10,000 years. Okay, you mentioned finding your voice through this past life memory, and I wanted to also throw in O.T. Bonnet. If you're familiar with any of the stuff that they do with Ozark Mountain Publishing, he was a doctor with some radical ways of thinking in terms of believing that hypnotherapy could help you recover some information that would help you healing. And some of the things that he discovered were there were some past life issues. If he could clear those or bring those to the fore in awareness, then people could recover because the issue was actually a past life a block that had remained there, an illness from a past life that was causing a current problem. So I wanted to get back into that with you in, you know, saying that it helped you find your voice, the Global Peace Initiative. What were you able to do with that?
You know, as soon as I really came to understand this, I decided that I wasn't going to, there was nothing that I wouldn't do. I mean, I was cautioned not to publish my first book under my name. Because there were, I recount seven past lives in that book, and I trace it back, you know, sequentially. And people said to me, "Oh, Dina, you're a name in the interfaith world. Don't put your name to this." And I said to myself, "You know, at this point in my development, I don't want to hide anything."
Yeah.
If I can't speak my truth, then I might as well go into a cave somewhere. You know.
Yes.
It's about speaking your truth. So I did come out with it, and that's when I realized how much things have changed and how much research there had been. I had Christian theologians call me and tell me, and I didn't know how they would respond. I was about to say, take it as a novel if you want, mm-hmm. but they said, Dina, there's been so much research now that you can't deny this. And I realized in the last 20 years, there's been a lot of study into this area. And I think that once it really permeates the collective and people accept this, it will change the nature of our society because it helps you overcome death and you see yourself as an eternal being who just different episodes, you know, different episodes in a series. It changes the way you look at things and you accept responsibility for what's happening in your life. Everything we have initiated at an earlier time. There's nobody judging us and, you know, fate. We have created our situations, which means that we create our future. That means that we have control over our future. And this is when I realized this, I made a conscious effort to resolve every relationship I had difficulty with. It's like, oh, all right, I'm going to work it out this time around. Why put it off into the future?
Okay, let me interject. In terms of karma, I had and I will do this really short overview. There was a situation where I was threatened. I was able to throw off the aggressor and move forward. And when I did that, I threw the person off and I was going to throw the person over the three-story balcony because I knew that would end it. The deal was the attendant beside me, my guardian, said, "Karma," right beside me standing. And I thought, you've been there all along. Okay. And at the same time, I mean, there were so many things that go through your mind, and I watched the person leave because what had been transmitted to me was that this was the end, that this particular incident, this encounter for both of us from whatever that person's learning required and my learning required was it was over. And if I indeed threw the person over the balcony with the strength that had been given to me, then I would be the aggressor. And so I would have turned that around to me attacking when I could just say, it is done. And so the karma for me, that's how it was demonstrated as I lived it through. And I now have a whole different understanding of how karma works. It isn't just, you know, you do something to somebody else. It's like you have choices. Your reactions determine right. your karma. And
exactly.
You know, so that's a part of this. And some people, I don't know. I don't think it's very well explained in our Western culture.
Oh, not at all. I mean, people tend to think of karma as just a tit for tat or a punishment, or, but it's all about a learning experience. And the quicker you can learn to resolve things in a way that doesn't cause more suffering, because once you're the cause of suffering, it's going to rebound to you in some way. The instinct is to hurt them back. But and all religious traditions teach this. But the way to resolve it is to get out of the situation without being a cause of suffering.
What my experience was that I, when I was going to do this, then that person, I thought I would be doing the world a favor. Because here's an attacker, here's a problem.
Right.
I wasn't able to see the problem from the source to see what the actual issue was. So it wasn't my call to determine whether this person checked out at that time. And so that was like, oh my gosh. Oh, you know, wow, light bulb. And
well,
so, you know, that's
actually a beautiful example, because that person's karma will take care of him. He initiated an aggressive act. That act will come back to him in some way, but you don't have to be the cause of it. All you have to do is protect yourself and reject, you know, protect yourself. You know, so that's a beautiful example how you were protected in that way from not initiating anything further. You were able to end it and not create something that would need to be, you know, dealt with in the future.
I was able to see also that there may have been a change as a result of our interaction that could have changed his trajectory as well. And by me doing something, I could have ruined that. I could have, you know, instead of allowing that there might have been some good coming from that, whether it's in this lifetime or further down, because of there may be a shift. And, you know, you don't know. I'm not supposed to know. But I do know that in that moment when that voice was there, it was that thing of, wow, there's, you know, and I know there's someone always watching. I just hadn't expected it to be quite so immediate.
That's a big knowing, though, to know that somebody, that we have all have protectors, we all have guides, and I think a lot of people intuitively know this. I mean, who hasn't, you know, had a close call with an accident, and it's like some force comes in and just moves you out of the way, you know?
Yeah.
So many ways we all have, and connecting with these guides is part of what happens, actually. As I began to see more, so the Satya that I mentioned, you know, as I wrote about him and felt his presence, it never got broken again. I mean, he's a continual presence with me. And, you know, this whole experience has completely changed my understanding of time. You know, 1,000 years, what's 1,000 years? It's like a blink of an eye. And also of space, because these dimensions where these beings reside, these subtler dimensions of light, are right here, right now. We just can't see them because our eyes are not designed in such a way. But we can see them with the spiritual eye. We can intuitively know that they're there.
When your awareness, like right now, it has expanded, and you're saying you're working on this next book, are you going to bring that character, that connection, into the fore with the next book?
Oh, yes. Very much so.
Okay.
Yeah, very much so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now we'll go ahead and take a break here, but I want to come back and say I want more questions about him. All right. So okay. So cliffhanger, and my guest again. This is the latest book, When the Bright Moon Rises: The Awakening of Ancient Memories, and it covers a big time period. What, 10,000 years for this?
Yeah,
for them
about
to reconnect?
10,000 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so it's not a short story. But it's written in novel form, okay? So you get caught up in the characters, and that's part of it. But I also want to say it's based on your own memories, your personal memories, and that's what more people are connecting to. We're going to come back and talk more about this character who's the in-between consultant and spirit guide, all right? I'm just putting it that way for right now. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. This is a part I think is really fascinating. Our spirit guides and those who are the unseen helpers, the assistants who, when the cars go in the wrong direction, all of a sudden you get an urge to turn and you miss the traffic, the big pile up or whatever it was. They're here and they're present. And so you said this guy who appears, this helper who appears in your book, When the Bright Moon Rises, is going to be a very big part of this next book. So I want to know about him, because is he 24/7? Is it something that is a romantic relationship?
It was. I mean, I had known since I first wrote about him, and he's in the last part of my first book, that I had shared a life with him on Earth, but it was a long time ago. But I couldn't remember it. I just knew. I knew that I had shared a life with him, that we had a connection from being together on Earth, but that he no longer reincarnated down here, and I keep coming back. So you know, I was writing my the next book, which takes place during the life of Krishna and during the Great War in India. It's the wife of Krishna, and who's pretty much been erased from history, and a lot to do because that's a declining age. And as I'm finishing that book, I remember my life on Earth with this being called Satya, who had a very instrumental, one of those turning point lives for me, which really set me on the path of self-knowledge. We have certain lives that are very significant in that we make it a leap forward. Mm-hmm. And often it's because of the beings we encountered in that life where we suddenly really seriously enter upon the path of knowledge. In that life, I realized he would not be returned. It was his last life on Earth because we graduate. I mean, the whole goal is to graduate.
Yes, yeah.
We graduate, but then some of us choose to keep coming back because we have loved ones here and because we want to serve the greater whole. Mm-hmm. And so some of us come back. I mean, hopefully not forever. There'll be a time when we can move on as well. But those other worlds, it became very real to me in this writing of this next book. It started with When the Bright Moon Rises, when I really was able to peer into that. Now I'm beginning to explore it more. Where are those celestial worlds? And, you know, many of the beings who appear here, the so-called ETs, I often wonder, are they physical beings from physical planets, or are they interdimensional beings from other dimensions who are appearing to help us as a human community? Because we are at an evolutionary moment. We have to evolve beyond this greediness that's destroying our Earth and beyond this domination. We need to dominate other people.
Have you had memories of any of that? Any of the ET extra-dimensional, interdimensionals? Have you had any of that?
You know, I have had experiences with some of the interdimensional, and I still don't know the answer. I think some of them may be from faraway planets, mm-hmm. but they must be highly evolved if they can have the technology to cross spans of time, mm-hmm. whether they dematerialize and then materialize again. They may be in the higher arc in their planet's evolution, or they may be, you know, we in all our history, we have histories of devas. You might call them angels, right?
Yeah.
I talk about the moon goddess a lot in The Bright Moon Rises. The moon goddess is very important in Chinese history, and she's a very important part of Chinese culture. What does that mean? Who is this moon goddess, you know? Is she an interdimensional being? Does she come from another place? I mean, she was a beautiful, benevolent, high being, but I haven't yet come to understand. You know, and that's the rational mind of mine wanting to understand it,
yeah.
not just experience it, but understand it. You know, they're most of the beings that I have seen are benevolent.
Mm-hmm.
There are some rascals in the universe, and I've seen one of those too. I stay away from them.
Yes, yeah.
We don't need to concern ourselves with those because the benevolent ones will take care of the less benevolent ones. But if we tune into the benevolent ones, whether they're from another solar system or whether they're from another dimension, we can, it's all about channeling their love. I've seen that the beings from the celestial world are filled with a love that we can barely contain. And that's what I receive from my dear friend Satya,
yeah.
a love of my beloved Satya, a love that's beyond anything we experience on this earth, a love of such intensity that it's hard to contain. And that's the story of the universe, that love.
Mm-hmm.
That's what all the masters are trying to tell us to tune into, to expand ourselves so that we can experience that love, which is of a much greater joy than any earthly pleasures.
When you start doing this kind of work, as you do it, I think that's the carrot that gets you to go forward, at least in my experience.
because I was given a moment when they call it Diksha, they call it, there are different names for this, enlightenment, illumination, you know, a Kundalini awakening, whatever it is, it feels really, really, really good.
Yeah, that's right. You're right. That's the carrot. I mean, once you've tasted it, there's no turning back, right?
It's like, whoa, where's this coming from?
Yeah. I'm going in that direction.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then they take it away. It's like, it's not so easy the next time, but that's the deal. That's it. I think
that's
as soon as you are ready and you are open, and it doesn't mean you are consciously ready. It means there is a moment that things switch on. And when that happens, then all bets are off in terms of what your goals are and your life challenges. That's like, nah.
Exactly. You know, it changes everything.
Yeah.
And then all you want to do is be a channel for that love and to help others at least see that that exists, that reality is there.
Yeah. And it's not about convincing and proving. It's about just saying, hey, what if? Hey, look, check this out. And that's what you're doing with your stories and your books in remembering those past lives and saying, this is where I was at this point and this is where I am now. And in the in between, I had a helper, an assistant to remind me, you're still going back again.
But it won't be long.
Yeah, you're going back. Okay, so we're going to find out in the next book how this companion related to you in a physical life and then in the non-physical form.
Right.
Aha. Uh-huh. Aha. Uh-huh. Okay, well, that's like a cliffhanger.
Yeah. I mean, all of my books tie together. I mean, the story is an unending one because all our lives tie together. It's really one long episode.
Does that take you away from your current, from the present? I mean, the thing with establishing the Global Peace Initiative of Women, that's pretty special and really a huge, I think, feather in your cap, saying that this is something concrete that I was a part of.
I think that it's morphed, it's changed over the years. Initially, it was to create a platform for women, and then it was to awaken the memory of these women teachers from the past, these great women rishis and other masters. Every culture has them, but they've been pretty much hidden or erased. And now it's about shifting the consciousness on the planet, because I think that there's a very important role for women to do in this shift. There's something about the divine feminine energy coming forward now to lift up and heal. You know, everything is now geared toward this shift in consciousness so that we can become a more, we can develop a more dharmic society, a society more in harmony with all aspects of life that's more caring, sustainable, giving. And so it's that, and that's only going to come about by a shift in consciousness, a change in the heart. It's the heart that has to open.
Are you writing more poetry?
I am.
I thought, you know, you got the bug.
Now that I recalled my poet self, she's not gone away.
It's like, wow, this is cool. Like in my little toolbox, a hidden compartment. Okay, we're going to wrap. Is there anything else you want to add before we close?
No, I just want to say that I hope people, at least if you can have your memories, detailed memories, know that you are an eternal being and that there's much that lies ahead and that death is just a change of clothing, really. And there are many good things that await all of us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your writing and your stories. And I know there's so much more that we don't have time to cover right now.
Exactly.
But the consciousness thing, that's where we're all going in knowing beyond words how we all add value to this world and this time in our history. So thank you.
Thank you, Wendy.
Dina Merriam, When the Bright Moon Rises, The Awakening of Ancient Memories, 10,000 years, the span that she remembers from her own personal past lives. A lot of wisdom in there, too, from the ancient cultures of China and India. You can connect with Dina on Facebook, and you can also connect with me on the blogs, Wendy's Coffee House or TalkingToNightlights.com. Thanks for listening.